The sun had been up for a few hours when Ellie finally stirred. Her head still felt stuffy, but she slowly got up and made her way to the bathroom, turning on the warm water and washing her face. She heard voices in the kitchen, and after fixing her hair in the mirror, she opened the door. John and Thomas were sitting at the table as they sipped on their morning tea. Seeing Ellie enter, both men stood up. John pulled out a chair for her, and Ellie smiled thankfully and sat down. Soon there was a breakfast of scrambled eggs and toasted bread with butter and berry jam in front of her, and she began to dig in, only now realizing just how hungry she was. Between bites, she listened as John and Thomas talked about the cows that would be giving birth soon. The farm couldn't support a constantly growing herd, so the plan was to raise the male calves as steer for beef and sell the extra female calves while trying to maintain a milking herd of about 30 cows. At first, John had wanted to raise another bull as well, but after hearing from Thomas about Ferdy's ability with flames, John gave up on that idea. It was clear that Ferdy had already crossed the threshold from animal to beast and would probably outlive everyone on the farm apart from John. Seeing that Ellie was about done with her food, Thomas stood up and gave her a short bow, excusing himself. Left alone with Ellie, John didn't rush to speak, instead pouring her a cup of hot tea. Pouring a cup for himself, he took a sip and put the cup down.
How are you feeling this morning?
A little woozy, but I didn't expect to wake up for at least a week, if ever.
That means this isn't your first time doing something like this.
Nodding, Ellie held her cup in two hands, breathing in the curling fragrance that rose from the top of her cup.
I have to admit, I was quite surprised to see you activate an ability like that. It was a curse, right?
Yes. My grandmother was a witch, and she'd intended to pass down her class to me. There was a problem, though, and I lacked the aptitude. Still, she taught me a few things to help me protect myself against other people. I didn't know if it would work on a class holder, so I had to move much more mana than normal.
You did quite well. Amazingly well, really. And the fact that your grandmother could adjust a spell so that you could use it means she was an amazing woman.
She really was amazing.
But what was even more impressive was your attack with the dagger. Very fierce.
Blushing slightly, Ellie hid her face behind her cup. Taking a sip, she put the cup on the table, still holding it with two hands.
I've been watching some of the training Ben has been doing with Thomas.
I can tell. It was a good strike. Swift, clean, and perfectly aimed. You can take comfort in the fact that you gave him the most merciful end he could have gotten. If I had gotten my hands on him, well.
Falling silent, John looked out the window. The early morning frosts had given way to a light dusting of snow that glistened in the winter sunlight. After a moment, he turned his head back to Ellie and took a sip of tea.
Do you mind if I ask you what went wrong when your grandmother tried to pass on her teachings to you?
Shaking her head, Ellie took a moment to straighten out her thoughts.
The problem had something to do with affinities. Witches use a medium for most of their spells as a way to borrow power from the natural world. My grandmother's affinity was the stars. She could borrow their light to reveal the truth of the world. She could also store up their power to use when she cast other spells. My mother also had a star affinity. In fact, all of the women in my family for 10 generations had the same affinity. But for some reason, my affinity was different. We didn't discover it until too late. And the backlash when the class ceremony failed almost killed me.
Your grandmother saved you.
Yes. She took the excess mana out of my body, but doing so shortened her life by a dozen years. She died little more than a year later.
They sat in silence for a moment.
I'm really sorry. That's a tough break.
Thank you.
Filling up his teacup, John poured more tea for Ellie as well.
And Ben? When did you pick him up?
Ellie's eyes widened slightly at the question, but after a moment, she smiled slightly.
I found him in the ruins 6 years ago. He must have been 4 at the time. I was 18 and had just come into the valley. So when we arrived in Fairfort, everyone assumed we were related. I just went with it. How did you know?
Magic runs in families. When I saw you, I knew you had magic or had used magic before. Even during the first meal we had, you did something to the bread. I assume it was the same spell you used on Grimes. Ben, on the other hand, only has enough magical talent to be a melee class holder.
Seeing Ellie's clear embarrassment, John smiled and waved his hand.
Seriously, I don't mind. I only brought it up to point out that I knew. Besides, mana of that level has no effect on me. Anyway, I thought it was unlikely you and Ben were biological siblings since your mana was so distinct.
Blinking her eyes as John's words sank in, she looked at him curiously.
Is that part of your class skill? To understand someone's mana? I imagine it would come in handy when guarding against hidden class holders at the palace.
Realizing Ellie still thought his class was Royal Knight, John just smiled.
I'm sorry. I got us a bit off track. You were telling me what happened with your class ceremony.
Yeah. Well, since we didn't know what my medium was, when I tried to accept the mana my grandmother put in my body completely rejected it and started to collapse. So she pulled the mana back out. However, the mana had already been infected by my body and it was destructive.
His eyebrows rising, John looked at Ellie in astonishment.
Hold on. You mean your ceremony didn't actually fail? It just stopped halfway through?
Scrunching her forehead, Ellie shrugged her shoulders.
I don't know. I don't know anything about it apart from what my grandmother told me.
John's eyes lit up.
No wonder you can use mana. You're actually still in the middle of your class ceremony. Wow, what a strange situation.
Seeing that Ellie was looking totally lost, John jumped up, getting a large bowl from the cupboard. Grabbing the kettle, he brought both to the table and set them down. Draining the tea from his cup, he placed it in front of Ellie.
Imagine that this is a regular person. Their capacity for holding mana is this teacup. What would happen if we were to try to force this entire pot of water into the teacup?
It would overflow?
Exactly. It would overflow, and the boiling water would burn everything around the cup. Now, when someone undergoes a class ceremony, the first thing the bestower does is use some of their mana to construct a bigger cup for the person in the ceremony.
Moving the teacup to the side, John put the big bowl in the center of the table.
Now what would happen if you filled the person up with this entire pot of water?
It would fit just fine.
And if the ceremony succeeds, the new class holder would have taken that extra mana, the water in our example, and used it to make the bowl their own. That way, they could hold mana from that point on. When a class ceremony fails, the temporary bowl that was created vanishes and the teacup cracks, making it virtually impossible for that person to ever try again. But your situation is still at the halfway point. Your grandmother's temporary bowl is still inside you, allowing you to use mana to a very small degree, almost like a brand new class holder. If you can figure out your medium or learn to control mana, you could make that bowl your own and you would be a mana manipulating class holder.
Staring at John in complete shock, Ellie didn't notice the tears that began to drip from her eyes. It had been her wish from as early as she could remember to follow her grandmother's footsteps, so to hear from John that it might actually be possible was almost too much for her heart. Taking a deep breath, she realized she was crying and quickly wiped her tears.
I'm sorry.
Nothing to be sorry for.
John rested his arms on the table and leaned forward.
The big question is, how do we determine what your medium is?
I don't know. My grandmother always said it was just something we would know. She spoke so fondly of the stars, and I think she just assumed I felt the same way. But she never knew what my medium was.
How did she gather her medium? You said it was stars, right?
It wasn't actual stars. She would go outside at night and dance under the stars. She said it allowed her to be closer to them and that their light held mana she could use for her craft. She could use other mana, but it wasn't as strong.
What was her mana like? Do you remember?
Closing her eyes for a moment, Ellie's face relaxed, as if she could feel her grandmother's manner all around her.
It was beautiful. Glimmering. It looked like diamond rain set against a soft navy blue sheet.
Rubbing his chin, John began to think back over the feeling of the manner he had pulled out of Ellie the day before. It was clear to him her manner had a particular feeling to it, but nailing down exactly what that feeling was proved difficult. Suddenly struck with an idea, John opened up his skill list and selected his new skill.
Mental model. 1.
He had 33 skill points to spare, and there were no other skills in sight, so with a shrug, he dumped all his 33 skill points into the skill.
Mental model. 34.
John had never added skill points to a skill so quickly before, and when the first wave of pain slammed into him, he knew he had made a mistake. Holding up his finger to ask Ellie to wait, he carefully placed his hand in his mouth and bit down so hard his teeth creaked alarmingly. As the waves of pain pounded into his brain, he continued to bite down, focusing as best he could on the pain in his hand and not the fact that his brain was being reduced to mush and rebuilt from the spinal cord up. It took a few minutes for the intense feelings to fade, and when they did, John found himself in a whole new world. Clarity unlike anything he had ever felt coursed through his mind. Years of crud had been cleared out of his mind. And even as he blinked, he realized memories that had been jumbled about in his brain were being neatly categorized and optimized for information retrieval. Shuddering, he brought himself back to the present and smiled apologetically at Ellie, who was looking at him with concern.
Sorry about that. Now, let's see if we can figure this out.
Leaning back in his chair, John closed his eyes and recalled the feeling of the manner that had rampaged through Ellie's body. If what he suspected was correct, the manner she absorbed had taken on the form of her medium. The problem was, the container that held it wasn't hers. Instead, it was made up of mana from another witch who had a different medium. Selecting his mental model skill, John activated it and began to try and figure out what sort of medium could create the feeling he had experienced. Over the years, John had come to a rough understanding of the various ranks of class holders. The system he and the other summoned people had was unique, and to his knowledge, no classholder native to this world had access to it. Still, they seemed to be instinctively aware of their classes, and as time went on, he had realized they were split into a few different grades. Classholders who were just starting out had skills that ranged from a single point up to 25. Skill levels from 25 points to 50 points were roughly equivalent to titled classholders like Haver the Wolf King, while skill levels above 50 points were considered legendary classholders and were rarer than unicorn horns. Having been able to boost his mental model skill to 34 points in one go, John was excited to see what it could do. Quickly, he realized the mental model skill was like a small computer that had been plugged into his mind. Right now, it was running back through every single magic user he had ever encountered and was comparing the mana he had pulled from Ellie to what he remembered about the spells they had used. Many categories of mages were quickly compared and rejected, and that information was used to further refine the model, quickly narrowing it down to only a few possibilities. Once it could go no further, it spit out the answers it had come up with.
Match to lightning magic, 31%. Match to wind magic, 44%. Match to water magic, 87%. Assessment. Medium is likely to be related to storms. Acquire more data to create a more accurate model.
Night had fallen, and John dashed through the forest, his flame-covered feet leaving rapidly fading sparks on the forest floor. As he ran, his mind wandered over the books he had in his bag. In addition to the all-important skill scroll he had recovered from the ruin, he'd picked up three important-looking books from the office, along with a quill and a compass, and another book from the library. He hadn't had time to look over them while dealing with the adventurers, but as things calmed back down, he was growing more interested in his spoils. Leaving the farm under cover of night, he was heading for the quarry where he had met the Grimm. It was remote enough that he wouldn't be bothered, even if he accidentally destroyed some of the manor locks, and he was interested in seeing if any of the Grimm were still around. Quickly arriving at the bottom of the mountain, He launched himself into the air, rising almost 200 feet in one powerful jump. Catching a protruding rock, he threw himself further up, the force causing the rock to crumble away. This time, instead of going up to the top of the mountain and down the other side, John opted to head around the mountain once he was halfway up, which put him at the top of the quarry. Flying down to the place where the trade had been completed with the Grimm, John saw that there were a number of items sitting on the flat table. Before he checked them out, he looked at the cave painting and saw that more detail had been added, including a section that showed what John had traded for. There was even a clear replica of his drawing of a book that was circled.
I wonder, is this a history? Or maybe there's more than one group of Grimm?
Walking back out to the table, he saw there were a few broken pieces of metal in a little pile off to the side. Poking through them, he realized they were old tools you might find in a hunting camp. What was of more interest was the dozen flowers that lay neatly on the other end of the table. Quickly creating 8 crystals, he swept up the flowers and then shot up into the air, heading for the peak of the mountain. The top of the mountain was just as bare as it had been the last time he was here, but the clouds had deposited a thick layer of snow earlier in the week that blanketed it in soft white. With a flick of his finger, the snow melted from the top of the boulder he had set up at the top of the mountain, and with another flick, a line of flame sliced the top of the rock perfectly smooth. Smiling happily, John sat down, his legs crossed under him. The night was freezing cold, and the wind would have cut like knives against his skin if he hadn't been entirely immune to both the temperature and the force. Instead, John thought it felt pleasant. A feeling of awe filled him as he looked out over the quiet valley, and his smile grew even wider. After meditating for a few minutes to make sure he was in the right state of mind, John began to get out the items he had gotten in the ruins. First was the leather-bound book that had been hidden in the safe. Taking it out, he examined the archaic writing on the cover. It took him a moment to work out what it said due to the faded, well-worn lettering, but when he did, shock ran through him.
Basic Arcanum. An introduction to mages, spells, and spellcasting.
For a moment, he simply sat in complete silence, unable to believe what he was seeing. He'd been looking for just such a book ever since he had ignited his first fireball, but the grim realities of this war-torn world never relented. So much time had passed, and the truth was, he'd already reached a level of magical control and power the ancient mages only dreamed of. Even the legendary mages who could cast forbidden-level magic were little more than a nuisance in John's eyes. Yet even the most basic magical knowledge was completely foreign to him. A wave of his hand could crush mountains, and yet in many ways, the newest mage of the bygone era was probably more useful than he was. Taking a deep breath, John stabilized his surging emotions and began to undo the mana lock on the leather-bound book. Maybe because he was afraid of damaging it, it took him nearly 3 times as long as it should have before the lock was removed and the book fell open. Swallowing nervously, John opened it up and began to read. Written in the same archaic lettering, the text took a while for John to get through, but with each word he figured out, he could feel his arcane tongue skill sucking up bits of mana as it magically enhanced his understanding of the writing system. By the end of the first page, he was reading with hardly any trouble, and by the bottom of the second page, it was no different than reading any modern book. The first few pages of the book were an introduction, and when he saw the name at the end of the introduction, his smile grew so wide, he thought his cheeks might split open.
Stormmaster Kelvis. So the ruins were the tower the journal describes. From the fact that Tower Master Kelvis could cast a forbidden-level spell like Windblade before the tower fell, he must have already been a legendary mage.
Growing even more excited to examine the other books he had recovered, John put Basic Arcanum down and picked up the 2 artifacts he had found. The first was a small compass without any needle. John could feel the mana it contained, but without spending a long time examining it, he knew it would be hard to discover what its use was. The more interesting of the 2 items was the quill. A faint mana signature that John was familiar with covered it, but otherwise it appeared completely ordinary. The manor signature was something that almost every surviving document John had ever found contained, and served to strengthen the material, ensuring the documents wouldn't decay with time.
Someone wanted to preserve this regular pen. I wonder why. This is getting interesting. Let's see what these books say.
The first book was a simple, brown, leather-bound tome, but as soon as John began to crack the manor lock on it, he could tell that it had been set by a legendary mage. Once a classholder's skill grew beyond level 50 and entered the ranks of the legendary, their manor would undergo a qualitative change, becoming purer and more powerful. The increase in its purity meant it was much more resilient than the manor of classholders who had not yet reached that legendary status, and the increase in power allowed it to dominate manor it came into contact with that wasn't as strong.
This manor is at the same level that Stormmaster Kelvis had when he died, and it feels like it matches. Hold on.
Plugging the manor into his mental model skill, John waited for a moment while his mind whirled.
Query. Was the manor lock on this book created by Stormmaster Kelvis? Answer. 99.7% match. Purity of manor in memory is slightly higher than the manor lock.
Pausing, John put the leather book down and stared into the distance.
That means that Tower Master Kelvis and Storm Master Kelvis were the same person. Maybe the stories of legendary classholders being immortal are right? Wait, but that means Thomas wouldn't be aging either, and he's clearly older than he was 3 years ago when he crossed the threshold. Though, in his case, we can't rule out stress. Anyway, could it be that Storm Master Kelvis had actually reached the sage level? Crazy.
Shaking his head, John got down to work on the lock, slowly adjusting his manner until he saw the manor lock fall apart. The book opened, and he saw a loose piece of paper tumble out. Catching it, he narrowed his eyes when he saw archaic writing and began to read.
Martius 2, 253. To think that it would be almost the anniversary of the day I first set out for the valley. So much has changed. So much has gone. And we go with it. My life will come to an end within 2 years. I can feel it with the same certainty I feel when I cast my spells. I thought I could escape the pull of time, but though it beckons me toward death more slowly than most, it beckons me still. Forgive me. I am old, and my mind wanders more than it used to. If you're reading this, you must be a descendant of mankind in the future when my seal has faded. Or maybe you are another race entirely. It does not matter. Let this be considered the final will and testament of Stormmaster Elmer Kelvis, the greatest and most feared legendary mage known to the world. In 1 week, we will attempt a spell that has not been used for 1,000 years. And it will either save our world, or damn it further. But at this point, there is no other choice. War has raged too long. The damage has been too great. There are few left to understand magic, and those that do hoard their knowledge with lethal jealousy. Even I, the most powerful being in this world, do not dare to share what I know, for fear that it will be turned to make more weapons of war, or bent to the destruction of mankind, rather than our salvation. This book, and the other two books I leave here, contain the research I am the proudest of. Laughably, it is research I did well before I ever developed the deadly wind spells I am so known for. It was with the intent of furthering this research that I originally accepted my banishment to this out-of-the-way valley. But before real progress could be made, war started. The only saving grace was that no one, not even the Academy's master mages, knew that I had become a legendary mage. Because of that, I was able to create another tower hidden in the mountains to ensure the research was able to survive the war. To continue the research, I sent my most promising student to the tower,
hoping I would be back when it finished. And yet, even now, I dare not go to the True Tower, lest others find it. I cannot speak much of it, as there exist those who can peer into the truth of the world and discover secrets hidden to all. But just know that I am not the only, or even the most powerful of beings in this world. There are others whose thirst for immortality far surpasses mine. But none of that should matter to you. By the time you read this, I expect that so much time will have passed that not even the memory of the wars that destroyed our world will be remembered. Only then will my mana fade enough that the seal can be opened. So, to you who read this, I beg a favor. Seek out the inverted tower I built. Seek out the remains of my student, and use it to restore this world. You will find two items on top of these books that will help you discover the path to the tower. The spell for using them is hidden between the three books. I've stalled long enough. It is time that I go. We will attempt the summoning and pray that it brings us salvation. I fear that it will bring us destruction instead. To those who survive us, I can only express my regret that I contributed more to the destruction of this beautiful world than I did to its preservation. My earnest wish is that the research I left might play some small part in contributing to its restoration.
Looking down at Storm Master Kelvis' broad signature, John couldn't help but remember the warm-looking man with the salt-and-pepper beard who had taken Catrin as his apprentice. Though he had died only a year later, after a truly terrifying fight with three other legendary mages who had appeared from the south, John had never imagined that Kelvis had such a complex history. Flipping through a few of the pages absently, John saw they were filled with tightly scrawled notes detailing experiments. Putting the book down, John wasn't sure quite what he thought. Those involved in the summoning of people from Earth had been one of the most tightly guarded secrets of the nations involved, and the little bit that John had discovered had indicated that everyone involved had died as the spell completed. But if what he read was true, Storm Master Kelvis had not only known about the summoning, but even played a major part.
Which would certainly explain why he was on hand to accept Catrin as an apprentice. We all just assumed he had been passing by, but he must have known exactly what was going on. Wait, that means that the others...
Fury began to grow in John's heart, but he hurriedly suppressed it before he got another doom point. He already had 74 from his mana use in the ruins, and he didn't want any more if he could help it. Calming down, he did his best to examine his memories rationally.
All of us were taken in hand and taught by class holders almost as soon as we arrived. My teacher was Thomas, while Catrin became Storm Master Kelvis's disciple. Of the six mages who were summoned, the two of us were the only ones who survived the first 2 years. All the others died to assassinations. Catrin survived because her master was so powerful, and I survived because, well, Thomas is a cockroach and I learned really quickly. It's clear they knew exactly what was going on. I wonder if there's anyone else who was involved who's still alive.
Shaking his head, John knew there was no reason to continue dwelling on it. Taking out the last item he'd received, John held it up and looked at it. The ornate box gleamed in the starlight, giving off an alluring sense of mystery. For this little box, six people had died, and John had a feeling they weren't the last. If he was going to be drawn into problems in the future, John wanted to know what he was dealing with. Catrin had said that the box contained the secret of how to become a mage, and if that was true, there would be others, many others, coming after it. The mana lock fell apart, and the top of the box opened a crack. Sensing nothing dangerous, John carefully lifted the lid, his eyes going wide as he saw a set of six glowing spell scrolls.
New spells detected. Summon water. Water arrow. Downpour. raging waters, greater storm, apocalyptic flood.
Battle Mage Farmer, Book 1, Domestication, by Seth Ring, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2022 Seth Ring. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2024 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Adapted and directed for graphic audio by Bradley Foster Smith. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Quinn Lambert. Narrated by Peter Holdway. Featuring Wynn Delano as John, Jenna Sharp as Ellie, Rob Moreira as Ben, James Lewis as Haver, Matthew Pauly as Grimes, Thomas Penny as Reese, and Holly Adams as Catherine. With additional performances by Christopher Walker, Kelly Baskin, Ryan Dallasung, Ken Jackson, Earl Fisher, Kaya Freites, Christopher Williams, Andrew James Spooner, Michael John Casey, Nanette Savard, Jonathan Church, Chris Stinson, Terence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Yasmin Twazon, Steve Winall, Elias Khalil, Eric Messner, Karen Novak, Jerry J. Marshall, and Bradley Foster Smith. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Keep listening to hear sample clips from the Divine Dungeon series by Dakota Kraut and the Iron Kingdom Chronicles by Privateer Press, now available in graphic audio, along with our whole catalog of exciting releases at www.graphicaudio.net.
Well, hello there. Going into the dungeon, are you?
The large man leaned down to the table, looking to Dale and the others.
Listen, I hear there are pretty decent herbs down there. No one complains right now, but it's hard to eat food that tastes of dirt.
He then placed a few empty cloth sacks on the table in front of Dale.
Fill these up, and I'll make it worth your while. Different plant, different bag. Got it? Great.
The chef straightened up, his eyes drained of all mirth and charm.
Don't fill them, and I'll make sure you get your just desserts.
The man then walked away as Hans looked down to the table with a slow shake of his head and then looked up to Dale.
Dale, I'm gonna let you in on a secret to a long life. Never piss off your chef, your boss, or your wife. Oh, I even rhymed it for you. That'll help you remember. Oh, also, when you get famous, never let someone make a song about you. That never ends well.
Why? Did someone make a song about you, Hans?
Well, I'm full. Don't forget to bring your bags. It's your first quest after all.
Hans stood and walked out of the tent with Dale scrambling behind in his armor.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.